Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, happy birthday to us, Catherine Whittaker. Day one of the French Open at Roland Garros and our sixth birthday. Happy birthday.
Thanks very much, David. Happy birthday to you too. It's not very often people wish one another reciprocal happy birthdays, is it? Twins?
Yes, it is a weird one, isn't it? Yes, but hey, happy birthday to all of our listeners as well, because a lot of them have been with us from day one, although there were probably about 14 listeners in episode one, which has grown to many more times that. And day one of the French Open is well underway, and we are the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Catherine is over there. Where are you right now, Catherine? You were next to Serena Williams' court yesterday. Where are you now?
I'm in the beautifully air-conditioned Eurosport green room.
Right.
Because it's unlike the forecast was always for it to be warm, but the scheduled thunderstorms haven't rolled in. It's merely just very hot and sweaty. So I'm grabbing a few minutes of respite. I'm using the podcast as an excuse to grab a few minutes of respite. I had just been out on court number one, a lovely amphitheatre-style court, but a pretty airless one, and had been watching Joe Konter, who has just this second tumbled out rather tamely, I have to say, at the hands of a former quarterfinalist here, Yulia Putintseva. I mean, who is a good Grand Slam, big occasion and clay court player, but still, I think the manner of Konter's loss there will be cause for concern.
Yeah, that's a poor loss for her on paper, certainly, because that's a player ranked much below her. And also, I feel as though coming in from Rome, there was real cause for optimism for Johanna Konta fans, in as much as she looked as though she was starting to get used to what she was trying to do. What really struck me, though, after the first set went awry, I think she broke right at the start of the second, did Konta. You're thinking, right, maybe this is it. And I watched the next couple of games and I thought, Putintseva is loving this. She's just turning it into this scrappy contest, and for an organised player like Konta, who likes everything just so that she can tee off and hit laser-like shots into the corners relentlessly, Putintseva just doesn't allow that, and she just got weaved into the web of this scrappier player who's feisty and makes it unpleasant as an experience.
I think that's true, but I have to say this was not far better in the second set, but this was not Yulia Putintseva's best match by any stretch. It was a pretty poorish performance from her as well. I mean, in some ways, that does have a benefit for Putintseva, because it gives Konta no rhythm. The fact that she was making a lot of errors and hitting a fair few double faults, it gave Konta no, particularly on returns, absolutely no rhythm at all. So, but yeah, it's not like I don't want to be too down on Konta, but alarm bells were ringing for me in that one, really ringing, because I think what she's trying to do with Michael Joyce is the right thing, you know, trying to take the pressure off herself mentally, trying to get out of her head, rewire the way her brain works, the way her brain makes her think about tennis, and, you know, take the shackles off her game and her right arm. But it's not working. It's not happening on the court. It is not happening. She looked as shackled as I've seen her out there, really, and it can be quite a tough watch a match like that for Joe Konta, because there's no plan B, is there? You know, there's no plan B. There's no ability to put that extra bit of spin on the ball to give herself the margin for error, which, of course, is particularly necessary on clay. I don't know. I hope it... there comes a point where you can't keep writing off one-off losses as one-off losses, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean...
And yeah, you
I
sort
think
of
we,
elevate them, don't you, after a while? And
yeah,
you have
we
to
might,
say
we might have reached that point, I think. But we'll see. We'll see how she reacts to it. No doubt she'll say the right things in her post-match press conference. I'll be hopefully speaking to her shortly, and I'll let you know via Twitter how that goes. You can see it on Eurosport. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm more concerned than I was after other recent losses, should we say.
Yeah, I mean, I think you wait a little until the grass, in many ways, because that is a surface on which she feels comfortable, on which she did very well last year. She plays all the events, typically. She played last year Nottingham, Birmingham, Eastbourne, then Wimbledon, so it's a proper season. Now that she's out in the first round, sadly for her, she gets the chance to do all of that again and get a bit of rhythm going, but really does need to come now. I mean, this needs to happen for her, because, I mean, yes, you can turn it around at any time, but the concern is the more scar tissue mentally that builds up, the more difficult it becomes to banish it in the future.
And that urgency, David, I don't think works brilliantly in the mind of Konta. Everything that we see of Konta, and particularly the insights we get from her interactions with Michael Joyce, imply that she needs to take the pressure off herself mentally somehow. And the fact that she performed so well on the grass courts last year and created that spotlight on herself, of course, the ranking points that came with it, that creates pressure. And Joe Konta is not enjoying pressure right now. So I don't know. I don't want to catastrophize. She's still a great tennis player. She's still an incredible professional. She's still working as hard as she ever has. I just don't think it's quite as simple anymore as just waiting for it to click in.
What do you make of the loss of Venus Williams today? Because that's the second first-round loss in a row at a slam she's had. I read today, courtesy of Ben Rothenberg, that that's the first time in 22 years that she's lost consecutive first rounds at Grand Slams. The previous one was to Belinda Bencic in Australia. Obviously, she was in a really rich vein of form. Today, it was against Qian Guang from China, world number 85, 6-4, 7-5. Did you get to see any of that at all? Do you get a feel for whether this might now be a problem for her going forwards?
I didn't see much of it at all. What I did see was Venus Williams practicing this morning, and she did look incredibly flat. She had a practice court booked for half an hour this morning, and she rocked up 15 minutes late and hit very, very reservedly for 5 to 10 minutes. But that's her style, you know, that's her style. She doesn't sprint onto a practice court and look really fired up all the time. She is incredibly languid in her movements all the time. So I didn't read too much into it at the time. But we know that she goes through flatter periods and flatter days. And I get why that's a good statistic, the second consecutive Grand Slam first round loss one. But I think it's a misleading statistic, because drawing Belinda Bencic in round one in Australia, that could have, at the time, Belinda Bencic was, you know, one of the top three or five in-form players. That could have been a Grand Slam semi-final. So I don't read too much into that particular stat. I think this potentially can be seen as more of a one-off loss. But well played, Qian Wang.
Yeah,
very
indeed.
Well played, Qian Wang, because she lost her in the first round here last year. She's coached by Peter McNamara. They've been working together for a couple of years now, quietly. Former coach of Grigor Dimitrov, of course. So, yeah, I it's a shame for Venus, but I'm not sure, David, she really comes into a French Open fully believing she can go all the way. I don't know about you.
I think she thinks,
yeah, I'll give this my best quarterfinal, but I think she probably finds it hard to fire herself up fully.
No, and I think knowing that Wimbledon is around the corner, she probably doesn't take long to reset her sights on that. Now, you mentioned that it was a flat performance from her today and a flat day in general in terms of getting onto the court, the practice court a little bit late. It had a bit of a flat day feel to it in general to me. I don't know about you. I mean, we've talked about this before, that Sunday starts at a Grand Slam and Sunday starts at other tournaments. It doesn't feel quite right to me. It never has. I understand why they do it. They get an extra day. They get an extra weekend day. And therefore, you know, they get big crowds of people in the concourses buying stuff and all this sort of thing. But a lot of the stadia early on today, Elise Cornet played and Miguel Monfils played and won. And a lot of the stands just didn't seem very, very many people in them. It didn't seem as though it was really that much of a good day.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of Sunday starts before today. I'm sure we've talked about that before on the podcast, and I'm even less of a fan of them after today. It has felt weird around here, without question. I think part of that can be put down to the fact that the draws, particularly on the men's side, a little also on the women's side, haven't thrown up many mouth-watering first-round encounters. That, you know, for example, the Venus Williams-Belinda Bencic first round in Australia, when that came out of the draw, everyone marked their cards to check out when that would be scheduled. And there were a number like that. There weren't really any like that for my money. Couple of more eye-catching ones, but nothing quite of that nature. So I think that plays a part, but also it definitely feels different. It doesn't feel like the big climactic start to a major event. It feels like, I don't know, it feels like a middle people's Sunday at Wimbledon or something, which actually it feels, I mean, that has its own sort of magic. Very difficult to describe. There are a lot of people here, without question. The avenues of Roland Garros are heaving with people, and it's very difficult to get from A to B in anything less than about half an hour because everywhere is so heaving with people. But those people don't seem to be filling up the stands watching the tennis. It's almost like this is a bonus day for them too. You know, there isn't the compulsion to sit there and make sure they drink in every second of tennis. And yes, there are good names on the schedule, and in particular for home interest with Puy and Cornet and Monfils as well. But, you know, it's very notable that the sort of top five cluster of big names that everybody would want to make sure that their bum was on their seat for aren't playing today. Djokovic, Nadal, Sharapova, Serena. They're not on the schedule today. And yeah, it kind of shows in the feel around the place. And I don't know. For me, it's going to start for real tomorrow.
Aside from the losses of Venus Williams and Johanna Konta, until then, I mean, I think I was going to say, actually, it's almost been flat on the court as well in terms of results. Not much has happened at all, really, when you look at the actual matches that have taken place out there today. And mainly that's because the players you would expect to win have won. Alina Svitolina was a winner. She was actually 5-1 down in the first set of her match against Ila Tomljanovic at one stage, but she came through to win. Sloane Stephens, a very comfortable winner. But I've been surprised in a way that there haven't been more competitive matches until those two that we've just had. Although I do see Yelena Ostapenko is a breakdown just at the moment. And I sort of feel as though she's one of those that could either go all the way or she could lose in the first round. She's up against Katerina Kozlova, who's a good player. But, you know, her game is so all or nothing that I wouldn't be that surprised if she ended up struggling early on.
Yeah, it's with due respect to Kozlova, who's exciting. It's so little about Ostapenko's opponent, isn't it? She either just completely takes the racket out of her opponent's hand, or she beats herself. So yeah, it's entirely plausible that Yelena Ostapenko, the defending champion, could go out today, and that really would. I don't want to see the defending champion go out. I think she's good news, but it would certainly give some gravitas to this day, which is something that for me has been lacking. Even the matches that on paper looked quite good, like the Monfils against the young French player, I have to look up his name. I hadn't heard of him before. He's 19 years old and hadn't played a tour level match before today. I believe he was a wild card. That one on paper looked quite good, but it was a very bizarre flat match. The atmosphere was flat. You know, Svitolina against Tomljanovic, it filled up as the stir went around the site that an upset might be on, but still it never caught fire in the way it should. You know, Svitolina is the joint bookie's favourite for this title, and she was 5-1 down, and it just, I don't know, didn't feel like it should for day one of a slam. Look, it's still lovely.
Monfils against a guy called Bonchetri, or something like that?
Bonchetri.
That's right, there we go. Anyway, he won the first set against Monfils, but ended up losing 6-1, 6-2, 6-1 thereafter. I'm just also looking, I mean, we're talking about players in form. Now, I'm well aware that we're talking to you midway through matches and things might turn around and we end up looking stupid, which I'm absolutely fine with. But Alexander Zverev, 6-1, 4-1 up, 3-1 up, sorry, first set and a half of his Roland Garros. That is exactly what you want to see if you are a player who's going to contend for this title. Okay, Barrancas, his opponent, is somebody who hasn't done an awful lot lately, but it's just statement stuff again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's only a first round statement, but it's winning a tournament like this, which has to be what his goal is all about, being clinical in these early rounds, isn't it? So he's, you know, you can't win it in the first round, but he looks like he's doing a very professional, mature job, albeit against a, you know, it's a good draw. It's a good draw, with due respect to Barrancas, a former junior number one. Another one of those. I felt like had he got a slightly more exciting draw, Zverev, he could have been one of those that could have got embroiled in a thriller, in a first round thriller, you know. But it didn't happen. I just saw him serve volley on a second serve. That was quite interesting. The other thing I just saw, David, on the monitor just in front of me, was what will likely, very likely, I reckon, be the last ever French Open match of Francesca Schiavone. She took it to a second set tiebreak, but she didn't quite have enough in the end.
Oh,
and
dear.
Pretty emotional scenes as she waved goodbye to Roland Garros. But, you know, she still qualified and did incredibly well to do so. I've just been interrupted by Mats Wilander.
Hello, Mats.
Which is probably an opportune moment, David, to tell you that I need to go and do some work.
Yeah, probably a very good opportune moment to do that. So you go and do that and we'll have a chat later.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. We're back. It's about an hour and a half later. I'm sitting in pitch darkness after one of the biggest thunderstorms I've ever seen in Solihull. And there's been a total power cut here. Catherine Whittaker, meanwhile, is in Paris and has just been speaking to Johanna Konta after her defeat. What does she have to say, Catherine?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I think it's fair to say that as much as we all, sort of the British press, like Jo Konta, expectations aren't always that high for a press conference like that you'll really get the deep reflection on what's happened that you want. She's somebody that likes to frame things for herself in as positive way as possible, and I think it's fair to say that, you know, journalists aren't always keen to do the same. So yeah, it was, you know, there was absolutely no catastrophizing from her. She was very committed to remaining with Michael Joyce. I believed her when she said she still believes in that relationship. And, you know, she just said she had a bad day today. There were a lot of quite pressing questions about the game plan and the lack of plan B and the sort of stubborn, relentless commitment to the plan A of just going for broke all the time, even though plan A very clearly wasn't working. She said, look, I have a style of play. I wouldn't be being true to myself or giving myself the best chances if I tried to play any other way. So, yeah, that's all fair enough. We know what kind of a character she is. We know, you know, how she has to work mentally in order to get the best out of herself. There was this one moment, though, David, where that sort of veneer, that little bubble she exists in, kind of fell away for a moment, and she said, kind of, look, this is really, really hard to come into a room like this and be interrogated about, you know, why you keep losing tennis matches at the French Open. And as much as she tries to remain in that bubble, it is incredibly difficult to do so, and for that not to exist somewhere in the back of her mind, you know, for her not to hear all of our criticisms and all of our questions. So I kind of like that. I like that she used a bad word in there, David. I won't repeat the bad
word. Which one?
It began with B. It began with B, and I
did
sort
it?
Of thought,
okay.
Yeah, angry Jo Konta. I quite like that. And then, of course, she returned to being endlessly polite and nice and considered, but which has its place as well. But I liked that glimpse of angry Jo Konta, but it did create an interesting atmosphere in the room for a few minutes.
Meanwhile, a completely different set of circumstances for Alexander Zverev. We were talking about him a set and a half to the good. And I mean, he cleaned up Ricardos Berankis in three straight sets. No trouble at all. However, Yelena Ostapenko lost the first set 7-5. What's going on with her?
She's just lost, David, this second. In fact, what I can hear over my
wow.
shoulder is the sound of the post-match interview, it must be, with Kozlova happening on Philippe Chatrier, 6-3, second set. Literally
Goodness
happening
me.
As we speak. Yelena Ostapenko must be trudging her way off Philippe Chatrier, this very moment, which probably means we should re-record that whole first section about this first Sunday of the French Open being a bit underwhelming.
But doesn't that just say everything? A about what the way a day can turn out, you know? And it was underwhelming early on. It was quiet, it was dull. And yet, as we said, she felt vulnerable really right from the off. And she is that sort of explosive player who wins the thing out of nowhere and then absolutely crashes out of nowhere. And, played Kozlova. But, I mean, that is quite a story. So Yelena Ostapenko, defending champion, out. And again, that opens things up even more, doesn't it, Dan, in that section of the draw? And, we'll see who ends up benefiting from it. I mean, this could be one of those Grand Slams, couldn't it, where we get a couple of finalists that we would never have expected again, same as last year.
Yeah, it could be. It could be, or it could be one that goes, you know, entirely to form. I assume you're talking about the women's side, David, because the Tennis Podcast predictions spreadsheets came in last night for the French Open, and the ones I looked at, there wasn't anybody brave enough not to predict Nadal to win the men's title.
Yeah.
Even though the algorithm we've carefully developed, or rather, nerdy math, my brother, is carefully developed, does reward risk.
That's always a good thing to know.
But it's not a risk that anyone's prepared to take, clearly.
Nick Kyrgios isn't going to win it. He's withdrawn from the tournament. We did wonder whether he might. He was supposed to play Bernard Tomic, who came through qualifying, of course. But they had quite the story today, trying to find somebody to replace Nick Kyrgios, because they went down the lucky loser list. I think about 8 players had pulled out, so loads of lucky losers had already come in. And in the end, Marco Trungolitti from Argentina, 190 in the world, who'd lost in the qualifying, he turned around his journey and he started a 9-hour journey back, which he's currently still undergoing, because he's due to be playing 11 o'clock tomorrow morning against Bernard Tomic on court number 9, the new court 9. So, I mean, what shape he's going to be in when he gets there, who knows, but what a road trip.
8 lucky losers have got into the draw this year. Pretty extraordinary. And I'm sure that number wouldn't have a number that high if it weren't for the rule change subsequent to Wimbledon last year about the splitting of prize money if you withdraw prior to the match. I think we potentially would have seen some of these players attempting to play or retiring mid-match. And so as much as that sounds like quite a high number, I think it's a high number that indicates a good bit of progress for tennis. But yeah, it's a big old number. And I think the next direct lucky loser entrant was unable to make it here in time. He literally couldn't get back. He'd gone on to another tournament, I think, and wasn't able to get here in time to face Bernard Tomic on court number 9 tomorrow morning. It sounds so antiquated that it's still a system that involves physical sign. You have to physically get yourself to what is it, the tournament referee's office, as quickly as you possibly can to sign in to take a lucky loser spot. You'd think it would be sort of automated in some way and involve iPads.
Indeed. Catherine, I would just, we've got about 3 minutes left, I would take everybody through the order of play for tomorrow, but we've got a power cut here, so I don't know what it is. I had it on my laptop not long ago, but that's gone.
Whereas I have the app, the Roland Garros app, open in front of me, David, and I'm unable to find the order of play on it.
Oh.
Because I haven't been asked yet by Google Play to review the new Roland Garros app. I'm not sure at this stage I would be reviewing it all too favourably.
No.
It's fair to say it's had a pretty that and the website have had a pretty bumpy launch into the world. I mean, I genuinely cannot find the order of play.
No, which is not great.
But I know that on Philippe Chatrier, Kvitova is up first. There's Wozniacki, who takes on Danielle Collins, which I know is upset alert for you.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's another match that I can't quite remember, David, and then there's Nadal.
Right, okay.
And then on Longlen, I know Sharapova plays on Longlen last, and that's about the extent of my memory. Yeah, yeah. And I know Heather Watson plays on court number 3 and Cameron Norrie plays on court number 6.
Right. Okay, so those two are in action. Well, that's enough to be going on with, Catherine. That's not a bad memory. So thank you very much for that. You can go and do some more work. I can also just let everybody know that James Ward, we were talking about yesterday, got to that Loughborough final, eventually lost in the Loughborough Challenger final, but a good effort from him to have got there at all. Don't forget, our competition for La Manga Club is up and running. Tennis Pod Castaways. You could get yourself a 3-night holiday in La Manga Club and get 2 days of academy training with their coaches. You basically just have to show your appreciation for this show by getting a picture to one of our social media outlets, showing yourself maybe in our merchandise or listening to the show in wherever you think would most
but using the hashtag Tennis Pod Castaways, David, crucially.
It is, yes. Thank you very much, Catherine. Right, go and speak to some tennis players, and we'll be back with another tennis podcast for you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.